I love old Christina. She was great. She had fun. She did her. She was chasing her dreams. I'm proud of her, but I would never replace who I am today to go back to that Christina, even with my legs, because although I was grateful, like, I don't think I was ever ungrateful for my family, for the experiences I ever had, my dirt bikes. I was never ungrateful. It's just the mindset and the way I live every single day today, because of my injury. It's just like I appreciate every single moment that makes me feel happy or just fulfilled.
Whether it's the clothes you wear to work or a metaphor for putting up a front, we all wear a uniform. But often there's a lot going on behind the uniform, and many of us are reluctant to express how we are really feeling.
Each week on Behind the Uniform, Dr. Izzy Smith and Captain Hugo Tuvey will be joined by a special guest as they talk openly and honestly about their experiences with mental health. Nothing will be off limits, so prepare yourself for tears, laughter and goosebumps.
Welcome back, everyone, to Behind the Uniform podcast. Today, we have a very special guest and someone I've actually been following for a few years now, and it's bloody great to have her on the podcast. And her name is Christina Vithoulkas, and she is an amazing, inspiring, positive lady. She's a former motocross rider and hopefully one day continuing to fulfill the dreams of riding motocross. She's an absolute amazing influencer. She's a racing car enthusiast, but her life did change in September 2018 when she had an accident, which resulted her in becoming a paraplegic. And today we're going to explore the ups and downs of Christina's life, but most importantly, what you can learn from this this inspiring lady. But Christina, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you. I feel I'm blushing from that intro. No, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you guys. Like you said, Hugo, we've been following each other for a few years, and I followed you for the same reason, thought you're very inspiring and love what you're doing, and I'm just happy that I can be a part of this and speak to you guys.
I love it.
Now, Christina, in my usual stalk of guests that we have on the podcast, I was looking at you and just like, how could this girl be any cooler? She's riding motorbikes, super positive. She's being lifted by the bouncers to a nightclub in her wheelchair. Yes. And I was like, we need to get this girl on the podcast. Christina, but for our listeners that haven't stalked you like I have, could you please tell us a bit about, where you're from, where you grew up, your family, and also just clarify, how old are you, Christina? You're 26.
So I'm 26, Pisces girl, born March 20th, and I'm a twin. So I have a twin sister. She's not disabled though, so she can walk. I'm the one that can't walk, and we grew up in the Riverland, so Barmera, South Australia. So it's a rural area out in the country on a vineyard. My dad grows grapes, so he's got lots of varieties that he grows. My mum's a school teacher; she's deputy principal here at one of the primary schools, and yeah, we grew up in the Riverland up until about 18 years old. We did a lot of traveling while we were younger. Fortunately, we had parents that took us to about 24 countries. And then we went to Adelaide to study, because we're twins, we had to do everything the same. So we both studied teaching. We both dropped out in our third year. It wasn't for us. I started riding dirt bikes, actually, when I moved to Adelaide. And I was 19 years old, started riding dirt bikes. Never really had any passions growing up. So once I found the dirt bikes, I realized, I'm like, okay, so this is what it's like to have something that you're passionate about. And it kind of made me realize I wasn't passionate about study and teaching. So I was like, oh, so I started riding more.
Christina, how old were you when you found that true love and passion for bikes?
19.
Well, it's an interesting one, Christina, because a question we like to start off and ask all our guests is what you're doing at your happiest. But just from hearing your upbringing and growing up and your love for bikes, I've got a feeling what you're doing at your happiest might involve being on a bike.
Anything that's like the most scariest things I do are the times I feel the most alive and the most happiest. So
adrenaline enthusiast, right?
Yeah. So that's why I got on the dirt bikes. And as you said before, going into the drift cars now.
Adrenaline junkie. God, Christina, I'm the complete opposite. I can't even stand on a balcony. That's how scared of heights I am. But that is an amazing introduction. Christina, you're also really close with your family as well. Mm. And you said you've got a twin. Can you just tell us, you got into the dirt bikes and then I guess, you know, what's changed your life so much was that accident. Can you tell us where you're at and what led to that accident?
Got into dirt bikes and the adrenaline addiction, and that's why I started racing. And then, you know, there was boys hitting big metal ramps and I was like, well, I can do that too. And got into freestyle motocross. I was racing motocross as well as doing freestyle motocross. So it's two different sports, I guess, with the dirt bikes, freestyle being a lot scarier and dangerous. A year before me being paralyzed, I did have a motorbike accident that compressed fractured a few vertebrae, and they told me I nearly paralyzed myself. So I was like, you know what, maybe I should stop. And it's actually kind of freaky because when I was back home visiting my family, me and my dad had this conversation. Dad's like, you know, what if you end up in a wheelchair? And I was like, Dad, like, this is what I love. Like, if that's what it, like, I'm not going to not do what I love. And yes, about a year later, was back on the ramps, hitting the ramps again. And I went to a new place. I've ridden at this place before, but I hadn't hit this particular jump. So it was the first jump of that day. I was more nervous than normal because it was a new jump and the run up was quite slippery compared to what I was used to. So it kind of didn't put me in the right mindset. I had to go get another rubber mat, get the boys to help me move it over. So the run up was a bit more smoother. So I kind of wasn't in the right mindset to hit it. And I still hit it though. I had that attitude. It was just always like, go big or go home. And I hit it. I knew once I took off that I hadn't gone the correct speed. I knew I was going to come up short, but I couldn't tell you what happened after that because I was completely knocked out. My friends and my sister were there that seen it, and they described it as me falling to the side of my dirt bike on my head and shoulder and completely scorping over with my bum hitting my head. And they heard the snap in my back, and I was out for about 5 minutes. They all thought I was dead because I wasn't like responding to them for so long.
Wow. And when you say you're out for 5 minutes, first of all, I'd hate to think what it was like for your sister and your friends at that particular moment when you're unconscious. But then when you kind of woke up and became conscious, what was going through your head? Did you kind of straight away work out very quickly what had just happened?
I was in pain. It's like it's the way to describe it. It's like someone just like stabbed me in the back. So I just felt like I had like a rock under my back. So I was in a lot of pain to even think about what was going on. I was just trying to like breathe. When I was there, I had someone go down to the bottom of my feet and tell me like, Christina, can you feel this? Can you feel this? And as I was laying down flat on my back, on the bottom, like corner of my eye, I could just see this person at my feet and saying those things. And as soon as I was saying it, the pain was just like overwhelming that I knew I was paralyzed. Like I knew that. I was like, yeah, I'm done. Like this is definitely me being paralyzed. I need the green whistle. Someone give me drugs. Like I need fucking drugs. That's all I can. All I remember was like, I need the green whistle. And I've never even had the green whistle before. I just knew it would get you high. So that's what I wanted.
So Christina, sorry, I'm giggling at the green whistle. I've got a few of them in my doctor bag and I've had housemates try and break into it in the past. I've heard it's not as good as people say. It's interesting. It's almost like you had a bit of a premonition when you were going down the ramp that something wasn't right straight away. How did that feel knowing that first few moments? I know you were in so much pain, but did you come to terms with this, you know, the significance of the situation?
To me, someone in a wheelchair was someone that just can't use their legs, not the bowels and the bladders not work. Like I didn't understand that, but I did know that I was paralyzed. Like, I knew my life wasn't going to look anything like it did. I knew I'm like, this is me in a wheelchair now. So I did understand that because of that previous injury before. But yeah, obviously didn't know to the extent like I do now how different it is.
And you at that, sorry, Christina, how old were you? You're 23 at that stage?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're early 20s. Yeah. You're a, you know, motocross rider, freestyler. You're hitting the ramps like you talk about. You had an injury 8 months earlier and then boom, at 23, your life changes in an instant. What was the, like the follow-on recovery, you know, going off in the ambulance, hospital, you know, I believe you had a 6-hour operation. What was all the recovery hospital stay like? And I just want to talk about that sort of next journey of your life.
Yes, so I can't remember being flown off. I do remember the helicopter noise, but I can't remember being flown off to hospital. I do remember, though, before I went in for surgery, the doctor said, Christina, like, you're going in for surgery. It's going to be a four-hour surgery, da-da-da. And I do remember waking up and the doctor saying, you know, it went all well. You lost 6 liters of blood, but we got it done after 6 hours. And I was just like, and I cut him off. And I was just like, 6 hours? I'm like, you told me it was going to be four. So they knew, like, they knew my brain was all right. Well, they think so far. I had no proof of brain damage. And to be honest, it's crazy, but it was like a holiday for me in hospital. Like, it was just so cruisy for me. I was in ICU for 3 days. The only time I got even slightly emotional was when I woke up out of surgery, and the thought of having kids was the first thing that came to my mind. Was like, oh shit, like, I don't know if paralyzed people can have babies. And that, like, my heart, like, kind of like sunk. And I stopped, like, you know, breathing for a second there until the doctor goes, no, you can still have kids. That's fine. And I was like, okay, anything after this is going to be sweet. Like, I can handle anything else. I just didn't know if I could handle that. And hospital was pretty crazy, to be honest. I had all my family and friends coming. I just had my best friend visit me yesterday. She was explaining what hospital was like for me at the start, which I didn't know this till yesterday. And she was telling me how she'd come in and see me and everyone would have their smiles on. She goes, but every time they used to walk out, they would bawl their eyes out and cry because, like, they're all keeping strong for me because I was so happy that they didn't want to show their sad side. And it made me think yesterday, I was like, yeah, like, it was a cruise for me, hospital. Even though it was full on, like, it was shitting on the ground. I shat in front of four nurses. After 3 weeks in Adelaide Hospital, I was transferred to the Royal Talbot in Melbourne. And that's, I guess, where I didn't get frustrated, but it was more so like, okay, like, I'm sick of hospital now. Like, I want to get out. And they were like, you're going to be here for 3 months. And I was like, no, I'm not. I'm not going to be here for 3 months.
And Christina, I was listening. It seems like you love proving doctors wrong.
Yeah.
And I think you've raised some really important topics I want to discuss about, you know, what paraplegia and, like, the bowel and the urinary symptoms. But I just want to talk about your positive attitude, because I was blown away listening to a podcast that you did where people just almost couldn't believe you were being so positive. And you talked about, you just focused on what you could do. You know, you didn't focus on what you couldn't do. You know, maybe you worried about the pregnancy thing for a second. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. I was listening to the episode and I almost felt like I was like your friends. Like, how can she not be sad and depressed? And I can imagine you'd have people just, you know, in shock. And I was thinking, you know, it's probably because that's how they would have responded. They would have felt depressed and they're just, you know, don't know how you could have been so positive. But can you tell us how you did deal with it? And, you know, your life has changed completely, but it sounds like, you know, everyone was amazed, like, of how you were dealing with it. Can you tell us about that?
When I try to think of that, because a lot of people want to know that answer, and I'm like, you know, where does this root from? Like, where did I get that type of attitude? And honestly, all I can think of is just my bringing up from my parents, and especially my dad, just constantly, like, repeating himself over and over again of, you know, how lucky we are, always lucky. Like, you know, we can go to the supermarket, fill up our trolley. People can't even do that. People don't, like, and every day he would drive us to school, walk us to school. And he was just constantly telling us our life lessons, to the point that were obviously,
it's
like,
so beautiful.
Brainwashed us. Even to the now, and you know, even growing up on Facebook, when you see, you watch, like, viral motivational things, like, they used to just really stick into my head when people used to say, it's not about, you know, what happens to you, because everything, something will always happen to you. It's just about how you handle it. And it's creepy in a way, because it's like, did I manifest this injury? But I did say to myself, like, if you, and for some reason it was femur. I always thought, if I ever break my femur, just be prepared that you're going to come out stronger. It's not going to ruin you. It's going to make you stronger, and you're going to be a better person from it. And I guess when the injury happened, I was like, I guess something that's going to make me stronger. And I just stuck to it. Like, I just promised myself that.
And you know what? I think what you're talking about there is really powerful, and a lot of people can take something away, because you're spot on. The concept about, we will all face adversity in life. We'll all face adversity. Everyone's going to have their own different adversity, whatever that might be, whether it be you having the accident, becoming a paraplegic, or, you know, me going through a couple bouts of cancer, or someone else tragically losing a family member and going through grieving, or whatever it might be, you're going to face adversity. And I think the way you've responded to or handled it is what I'm truly inspired by. And I think the fact you even just, you know, I was in ICU for a few days and you kind of brush over those things, but you truly were just remained positive, I think's pretty phenomenal. And I think you said you're, you got told you'll be in hospital for a few months, but once, as Izzy said, you wanted to prove the doctors wrong. So you correct me if I'm wrong, you broke the record for someone in your situation to actually get released from hospital.
Well, I asked the nurses and they're like, the fastest patient we've had is 2 months. I was like, okay, 2 months is my goal. And I got out 3 days before the 2 month mark. So.
There you go, killing it. And I think for people listening who might never really have experienced or have much understanding of what it's like being a paraplegic. Yeah, I remember when a previous podcast I did, I interviewed a quadriplegic. His name was Ben. You might even know Ben. He lives in Adelaide. He does a lot of advocacy work. But just him explaining what his day-to-day life was like and how it's so different to me or Izzy or someone else.
Yeah.
Do you just want to explain to the listeners what is a normal day for Christina? You know, from waking up in the morning to getting changed, having a shower, what does a normal day look like for you?
And I know that's quite easy to forget as well, like how different it is. Because even like my own sister, sometimes I'm like, oh, Irene, I've got to do my bowels in the morning. She's like, oh, you just got to sit on the toilet for an hour. And I'm like, there's more to it than that. So like the morning routine is like a lot longer than usual, and it's not even just doing your bowels in the morning, it's having to take medication the day before. So for example, after this podcast I'm going to take my meds so that way I can do my morning routine at a certain time tomorrow morning, which involves waking up, putting a suppository up my ass,
I love how you just very direct with your terminology. It's great.
The reason I like to be so direct about it, because I feel like a lot of people get embarrassed or ashamed with they get embarrassed for me, and it's just like how can we get embarrassed for doing stuff that we need to do to survive? And I feel like the more open I can talk about it, the more comfortable it might make someone else seem to do whatever they have to do in their routine, whatever medication they have to do. It's like, we've got to do what we have to do to survive. So finger up the bum every morning for me. and then it's a manual stimulation bowel routine on the toilet. That's like about half an hour. Showering takes, a little bit longer, obviously, because you're in the chair. Shaving legs, paralyzed, is very hard. Like legs are flopping everywhere, trying to balance them on the wall. And then I've got to do my catheters every 4 hours. I can't tell when I need to go to the toilet, so I just do a catheter.
I'm just going to explain, some people might not understand what a catheter is. So you put a tube through the urethra to empty the bladder?
Yes.
I was just going to say, have you had any problems with like urinary tract infections or?
Yeah, so I had heaps. Like it got to a stage where I was having a UTI every week for about 3 months. Having accidents, so pissing myself. It was actually one of the times I cried about my injury was because I was trying to get Centrelink, and it was a very long process. And I had a UTI and I was in bed, and Centrelink had rang me up finally after like months and months and months of trying to get Centrelink, and I just pissed myself as the guy on the phone was like, you've been declined Centrelink because you're not disabled enough. And I was just like, just wanted to scream. I was like, are you kidding me? Goodness. I just pissed myself and I'm not disabled enough. But yeah, I had like 3 months of UTIs because I didn't realize I was sugar overdosing. It actually had nothing to do with bacteria or anything. Yeah, I've got those under control. I got my diet sorted out, so I don't have to suffer from those anymore. So at the moment, I'd say I've got a pretty good bladder control, just with the timing everything. But for example, now I'm drinking a Red Bull, or if I drink some alcohol, you've got to be very on top of things, like doing catheters more regularly.
It's even just hearing you explain all that, Christine, I must admit I didn't truly know some of that extent of it. And I must admit I straight away put my hat on and I sort of have that perspective piece to go, me getting up a few times during the night, you know, going to the bathroom maybe 12 times a day or something, it can be annoying. But then I hear what someone like, you know, you go through on a daily basis, or others go through on a daily basis, and that's your normal. And I guess that's the interesting point. You've just learned to adapt that's your normal. That's your morning routine. You crack on with it. And I think, like I said, it's massive perspective for me.
I was just going to put some interesting topic to discuss. I don't know if you've heard of this, Christina. It's called like, I think, the hedonic treadmill, where in life we have like a happiness set point. So genetically and from our upbringing, you know, let's say you're obviously like an 8 or a 9 out of 10 happy person. And when we have, you know, some people are just always a bit glum, they're like a 5. And when we have a major incident in our life, such as the accident you've been through or what Hugo's been through, your happiness drops down for a little bit, but then it goes back to normal. And yep. I think that's just such an amazing concept. And this has been proven in studies that, you know, we think our happiness is from how much money we earn or what job we do or et cetera, but it actually is completely about our perspective and our outlook. And so we've got a little bit off track now, but I know you said, you know, you're a better person with a more fulfilled life now. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, you seem pretty happy, and it's just amazing perspective and how you've, you know, changed and handled, you know, so much, but still, you know, you're happy, positive self.
Yeah, well, that like what you said about me having to do catheters and how much, like how time consuming this disability is. Like I even like had another like fellow disabled person like kind of whinge to me like, oh yeah, but it's fucking hard, isn't it? And I'm just like, I can't relate to them because the way I see it is that's my work. That's my work I have to do to get the reward of being alive. So I don't think of it like that. I'm grateful that, okay, I have to do catheters all day. That's great. I'm alive though. So it's, yeah, definitely perspective.
I love the honesty with it. And I think it's, like as you said earlier on this episode, little things like you don't let things stop you doing what you love. And I think I heard you saying like when you thought you might not be able to go to your favorite fishing spot, but then you thought, well, that's okay. Instead, I can go on a boat and go to another fishing spot. Or, you know, I might not be able to go to a certain nightclub, but then as you've proven, well, you can, because you can just get the bouncers carrying you down the stairs, which I love. But your sister, now we've talked about support network. Now I'm a twin myself. I've got a twin brother. I think twins are the best people in the world, right? They're like your best friend, family, all in one. I love it. So I can kind of relate to the twin aspect. But your twin sister put a post up about, and I think, you know, went quite viral in the end. I can see why it did, about why she goes to the gym, why she works out, why she lifts. And then she had a few little snippets of her carrying you into a beautiful waterfall or hiking through some trails or, you know, just looking after her sister and not and letting you live a fulfilling life in exactly what you want to do. Can you just touch on what your sister really does mean to you and how she's kind of really, I guess, over the last 3 years of your journey, what she's done and how much she means to you?
Oh, I'm actually emotional. I haven't got emotional over Irene for a long time. That was just touching because it's like she does, like when someone else sees it, like I see it, like to me, it's just normal. Like we're family. Like that's what we both would do for each other. But like, it's cool that other people can see it too, because what she does for me is incredible. It's like when we went to Ellie Beach and I had these companies all ring when I rang them up to say, I want to go to the Whit Sundays. And they said like, no, sorry. Like we're not covered. If anything happens to you, it's always, you know, in case something happens to them, we can't take you to the Whit Sundays. And I was just like, I couldn't believe it. And Irene, and I'm so used to saying, accepting no as an answer. Like, I'm okay, fine. I can't do it. I'll do something else. Where my sister, she's like the stubborn one. She's like, no, we are going. Like,
she even has red hair. It's like fiery red hair.
And she's on the phone. She's like, I will lift my sister. I will. You guys don't need to do anything. At festivals, oh, my God. God, I feel so sorry for the ladies. And the people that are coming out from the disabled toilets, because she got, I'm like, Irene, she's like, no, they can walk. She's like my security guard. Like, she will say things that I'll be thinking, but I would never say out loud. Like, so she's like, no, I'm going to say it. But yeah, she means the world to me. And the fact that, like, it's that unconditional love, like, you know, your friends, you know, I really can't compare it to my friends as well, because my friends are really great too. I surround myself with really beautiful people. I'm fortunate with that. But, like, she'll do that extra, like, I don't feel guilty for letting her try to get something done for me, where with my friends, I'm like, no, dude, like, we'll go to another club. Or, like, I don't want to burden my friends in that way. And I know they tell me I'm not, but, like, that's just me. Where with Irene, she'll like, I feel comfortable knowing that what she's doing is what I would do for her too. So
just unconditional love.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you're listening to this, Irene, you sound bloody awesome.
She is.
Christina, what you said then about, you know, going on a holiday and a company saying you're too high risk or not being allowed to get into a nightclub because you could be, you know, injured going upstairs. In my mind, that is discrimination, and I'm kind of blown away that that's even legal, and shows how, you know, naive someone like me who's able-bodied just has no idea. But could you tell us a little bit about how you feel, maybe the way society has made you feel now living with a disability, and if there are things that you think are important for people to know, such as, you know, things that as a disabled person doesn't stop you, or things that really bother you of how, you know, you're treated or seen?
Yeah, so when I was speaking to another disabled friend the other day, we're talking about rehab. We went to the same rehab. I'm not at the same time though, and we both agreed. I'm like, don't you feel like they treat like everything slowed down when you're disabled? Like at the rehab, everyone, not the nurses though, nurses, beautiful, but the physios, the OT, like everyone that you deal with, just like, I don't know how to explain it other than like, everything slowed down
and make you like seem like you're less capable, like you can't keep up.
And you're like, everything's slow and you're like a child again. And it's like, and I remember saying on multiple occasions, I remember being in rehab and I'm like, I feel like if I just stood up and eye height with these guys, I would be spoken to completely different. And it's crazy because I think all they do every day at work is deal with people that are recently injured, that they've like somehow got this image in their head that because we're just freshly injured
treating you like more like a victim.
It's hard, I don't know how to explain it other than I just knew I would be treated differently if I wasn't sitting in the wheelchair. And the way I like kind of explain with the for example theme parks, you know, we can't go on rides because they're not trained. In case we are, or we can't exit a ride safely, even though that's the exact same as if you were on the ride and you fainted, same scenario. I'm just, you know what I mean? It's annoying because
you're happy to take a risk, but they're not.
And the way I explain it is, okay, give the statistics on how many people die on the road each year. You take that risk to keep going on the car, driving your car to work. You're an adult, so you have calculated the risk.
But you're not, you're not letting me take that personal risk.
I can't take that personal risk on going on that ride because it's going to cover your ass. Like, and it's like, well, that's like telling everyone they can't drive their road on the roads now to save the council's ass. You know,
that's a really interesting perspective.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I'm just imagining the physios talking down at you, and I cannot imagine you ever like being slowed down just by our podcast so far. So I'm glad that you proved them right by getting out there on record time. Then Christina, this podcast is all about, you know, going behind the uniform and, you know, touching on, you know, uncomfortable or, you know, a bit deeper topics. Do you want to tell us a bit about like relationships living with a disability? You know, I'm sure there's even like taboo about sexual, like you know, not that it is anything, you know, related, but you're obviously like gorgeous and it sounds weird, but like oozing sensuality. Can you tell us a bit about like dating and, you know, living with a disability and, you know, taboos or things that you think should be talked about?
Yeah. If you follow me on Instagram, I talk about that stuff quite often. And it's been 3 years and I'm still learning. Like, this might be a little bit too much information, but I just,
such thing.
Oh, I just bought this vibrator thing because I had a paralyzed girl tell me like, girl, you can finish off, trust me, buy this thingy. Anyways, I'm waiting for that to come in the mail. We're going to do some experimenting.
So not to sound like a creep here, because I feel like I could sound like a creep, but I'm actually genuinely interested in people listening.
The moustache kind of adds to the creepiness as well.
I know, I'm kind of listening here. Like, this could sound creepy, but I'm actually curious. I'm sure people are curious too. But
no, that's why I love to talk about it.
When you say you don't have feeling from the waist down, for example, and you just said, you know, you bought a vibrator and you know, I'm sure you've still got a sex life like everyone. But do you want to explain, you know, what that's like in terms of when I spoke to Ben, a quadriplegic, like I mentioned in the previous podcast, he would often say he was heightened sensations in like his earlobe, for example, which I found bloody awesome, but he could often orgasm from his earlobe. So like, do you want to explain what it's like with that?
Yeah. So the way, and that's why I like to talk about this on my Instagram, because I feel like
there should be no shame.
Everyone has sex. Everyone wants sex. Even if you're not having it, like sex is so normal that I want to talk about it, and that's why I know straight away that's every conversation I have with people, it is, if it's not the first, it is within the top five questions that will eventually be asked about my paraplegic like situation. I'll mention something about sex or wanting to have sex with a dude, and someone's like, oh, so you can like feel it. So the way I like to describe it is, although I can't feel even if I was to use a vibrator or have sex, even though I can't feel, we have
autonomic nervous system. Like the autonomic nervous system?
Probably.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, you probably did. That's probably it. But even that, like we have phantom sensation, right? So, for example, if I see someone stub their toe, my toe starts hurting. I can't feel it. Same as an amputee cut their arm off. They can still feel their arm. So even though we can't feel the sex while you're having sex with someone, doing it all, you still feel horny. Horniness and sexual arousal all is all in your head as well. Like, especially for females, it's like, I was researching it and it's like 90% of like an orgasm's from their head. And that's
people have orgasms in their like sleep about buying shoes.
Yeah. So that's like, yeah, exactly. Lucid. I was trying to lucid dream because I was like, fuck, maybe it's been 3 years since I've had an orgasm. Like maybe I'll try lucid dreaming. I stopped having sex the last year just to focus on myself and have more time on doing stuff I like. But I've recently met someone that, and yeah, he's got me excited to like try things again, and that's why I bought this toy so we can do this stuff. And the last time I've seen him, like you can still have a really intense like sex life even though you can't feel it. I don't know how to explain because it is hard for people to understand.
Can I just ask Christina, let's say someone is dating someone with a disability, or you know someone who, you know, has a similar disability to you, and as you said, everyone likes having sex or wants to have sex, is having sex, but maybe they don't feel comfortable bringing it up with a potential partner. Can you give advice for, you know, broaching the topic about sexuality with people with disabilities? Because it shouldn't be a, you know, shameful or taboo topic.
Yeah, so, and that's a big thing I try to push out to people, whether they're disabled or not, is to talk about your sex life, especially if you've got a partner. At least express what it is that you need from that partner, because that is so important. I feel like before my injury, I could feel my vagina and I was having orgasms and the sex was worse than what it is now and I can't even feel it. And that's all because I'm expressing exactly what I want and what I feel, and I'm getting that in return. And I guess for like other people, I just like to speak about it because I want other people to look at other disabled people. Like Maxine is a nympho. She's always talking about having sex and stuff. So obviously when they see another disabled person, I'm thinking like, oh, like there's still obviously something going on there too. So
no, I love it. I love it, Christina. Like what you're doing here, which is great. It's that you're breaking these stigmas and talking about these, you know, perceived taboo topics. And I think it's fantastic. And you quoted saying this was the best thing that could have happened to me because of the person I've turned into, the strength I've gained, the resilience, just everything about who I am right now.
Yep.
Now, you know, much as I love talking about the sex chat, and I think is it's the first time on the podcast we've actually done that, the sex talk, which is important.
But it's important.
Everyone, it is important. Sex. And you know what? It is a mental health podcast, right? And sex can be great for your mental health too. But that quote you talked about saying it's the best thing that could have happened to you. So, you know, pre-accident Christina and post-accident Christina. Do you just want to talk about what you mean by it's the best thing happened to you?
I love old Christina. She was great. She had fun. She did her. She was chasing her dreams. I'm proud of her, but I would never replace who I am today to go back to that Christina, even with my legs, because although I was grateful, like I don't think I was ever ungrateful for my family, for the experiences I ever had, my dirt bikes. I was never ungrateful. It's just the mindset and the way I live every single day today, because of my injury. It's just like I appreciate every single moment that makes me feel happy or just fulfilled. Even if it's just sitting here looking at my dog for like sleeping, I'm just like, oh my God, I'm so happy. Like I've got a Rottweiler. I own a Rottweiler. I've always wanted a Rottweiler. I've got one. Like where beforehand I wouldn't have like noticed that much, where now it's just like constantly being reminded of how lucky I am, especially being aware of my disability. I know how many more people have it worse off, or I shouldn't say worse off, but like, you know, they've, you know, some people can't move their hands or some people don't have their parents. You know what I mean? Like I just can't help.
Sounds like gratitude is a really strong theme for you.
Yeah. And obviously the resilience and learning that these things that we go through in life that feel like at the time they are completely, you know, chucking a massive like curveball in our life, just really realizing that these things build us, and that's what makes us who we are. And it is so important for us to go through those moments, because without those, I'm not going to be who I am today. And yeah, I love who I am today.
No, thank you for that, Christina. And I love hearing you say that. It's you can tell the passion in that. And I think you worded it perfectly. And I just want to quickly just say, I can relate to part of what you're saying, as far as people have often asked me about, you know, having a couple bouts of cancer or what I've gone through in the years of treatment and recovery. And I've said similar things where actually I wouldn't take it back, because I'm where I am today as a result of that. I'm grateful for doing what I do and sharing my story and helping the lives of others as a result. I wouldn't take any of it back, because I'm proud of the person I am today. And what you're saying, I can kind of relate to that. But I think people listening to that, I think will be pretty inspired by that. But thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, and that's another thing I would have wanted to mention, like why I followed you and, yeah, really like what you're doing as well, is because I feel like after this accident, it's after all the love and help that I received from my accident, I really realized like life isn't about, you know, your career and all these important things that the world makes you think is so important. It's just about being happy and helping others. Like, it's all about helping others. Like, everyone's doing life, like everyone thinks that on their own, doing their own pathway. It's like, really, it's all about everyone helping each other. And I feel like the more we can help someone else out, and that's what my injury I feel like is doing, is helping someone else out, like that is so much more rewarding than getting a fat paycheck. Like, no one getting a message from someone saying like, oh, you've, you know, really made me, you've given me hope. Like, oh, that's like $1 million paycheck right there.
The most rewarding thing ever, the most rewarding thing, knowing you are helping other lives. It's unbelievable. I've got no doubt, Christina, through you being so honest, open and vulnerable and sharing your story, you would be helping so many people. And so I thank you for that. But, you know, I just want to quickly touch on, you know, it is a mental health podcast, and we often talk about mental health strategies. And do you have something that I know you just seem like, Izzy was saying, the happiness scale, you seem to be this ultra happy, level 8 all the time, positive from almost the point of accident injury. But I've got no doubt that you've probably still had down days, right? But you just want to talk about when you have those down days, how you can just quickly just go, you know what, I'm going back to my positive, happy Christina.
And that's the thing. It's not quick though. Like, if I have those down things, and it's not, I've never felt ungrateful or upset about my injury. It's like real life stresses that I've had to deal with. Lawyers and bullshit in my life that I wouldn't wish upon others. Yeah. So like, just stuff that you don't even, like, everyday stuff that people would have to deal with. And I find that, I think it's like the way I try to like describe it in my own head is like when someone's on a diet and they're trying to eat healthy, they have a cheat day on Wednesday, and then they think, oh, you know what, I'm going to give up now and just eat junk food for the rest of the week. How much better off you are if you were to accept that cheat day and then go back onto your diet on Thursday and continue on, and you're still going to end up at a better result even though you had that cheat day. That's me with my bad days, like when I go into like down moments and I'm having like, you know, I feel like I'm just like not myself and I'm not my happy self, I just sit there and like accept it. Like, I'm like, this is my cheat moment, this is my down moment, but you are going to get back on. And I feel like the people that don't have hope or like think that this is like the end, and they end up stuck. And the more you think about it, the more you're accepting where you are, you kind of just stay there unless you work towards it. Like, I feel like for me, I had to work. Like, I'll sit in the shower and I'll literally be so depressed and I'll be like, Christina, you're depressed, but you're going to be happy. Like, I'd still tell myself, you're going to be happy soon. You're going to be happy soon. You'll get back out of it. You have to like work towards it, but you definitely can.
And Christina, because like I said, I've been blown away by your positivity. And I think I've had those, when I heard your story, I was like, how could she be, you know, so upbeat and say her life's been better? And that's because I'm, you know, projecting how I would, you know, deal with the circumstances that you've been through. But it is totally normal to have shit days. And that's something Hugo and I really like to talk about. Being a positive person does not mean you are positive all the time. Like you talked with Hugo, you have times when, you know, you're crying in the shower and recognizing you're depressed. Did you ever get any professional help to, you know, learn these skills? Because you seem really wise. Like, all of this happened to you in your early 20s. You're younger than Hugo and I. And your like mental like toughness is like fucking it phenomenal. But did you get any professional help during that time?
I tried, and I was just like, man, I'm a better counselor than these counselors. Like, I just didn't. I went three times. I'm like, yeah, I'm just gonna coach myself out of this, and I just coached myself. And
did
I
you read any books or like?
No. I literally would sit there and reflect on exactly what I was doing and really reflecting, like, right, if I want to change, like, you are like real, you're speaking too negatively to yourself and being too harsh on yourself. And like the things that, like, the biggest thing, like, if I'm having like a really, like, I found out some scary news about a family member, and that was like a couple of weeks ago, and like no one knew, but I was fucked. Like, I was so, I was crying like 3 times a day. No, none of my friends knew. I didn't tell anyone. My best friend, no one knew, because I just was stressed about this family member. And the way I snapped out of it was like, Christina, like, I you don't realize what you're doing to yourself. And you're noticing that you actually indoors more, you're not eating right, it's easier to eat unhealthy and binge on TV. So I was like, get out of bed, go outside, listen to music, like, just force myself to, like, change my habits, just so, even though I might not have thought that those habits would have made me happy, it was more so just changing the environment I was in to start
feeling better again.
Yeah,
you're very self-aware.
Yeah, self-aware. It's just self, like, I sit, like, and that's why when I do my big road trips and I have friends ask me, like, oh, can I come for the road trip, I'm like, no, like, that's my therapy session. I just sit there and evaluate my whole life, like, while I drive.
You seem like one of those people that, like, if I was having a bad day, I just want to be around you. Like, get Christina around for a couple of beers. She's going to make me feel better.
God, definitely. I get that. I get that from my friends. I'm just, yeah, cracking energy.
Now, Christina, now as we start to wrap up and think about, you know, final questions, I want to know, are you still on the bike at all?
No. So, and the only reason is because I've bought a drift car and a house deposit, probably 2 house deposits gone now into that drift car. So I want
not, to not about money though. Not about money though, right?
No, no, you can't put a price on happiness. And that's how I see it. That's the no guilt there. But yeah, so I do want to get back on the bike. It's just at the moment, my focus is my drift car. And also the way I explain it to my friends is if I sprain one wrist, that is me out of action with independence, showering, toileting, driving, transfers. I'm completely out. So I am a little bit timid to get back. I will get back on, definitely, but the drift car's got my focus because I know I'll be 100% able to, like, push the limits and have fun without that consequence.
Christina, talking about consequences, I know your sister is also a motorbike rider, is my understanding.
Harley.
Yeah. Do you worry about her, and have you ever been, you know, I'm a doctor, I'm risk adverse, I can't even stand on a bloody balcony, but do you ever worry about your sister riding motorbikes, or ever even think it's irresponsible that she still rides motorbikes after what happened to you?
Well, after it happened to me, that's when she bought a Harley. So it was like, really? And even Dad would say, like, really? I don't need 2 daughters in a wheelchair. But, like, so she does worry me, but the way I see it, like, I end up being a mother with my friends, especially around water. I'm always like, you know, feet first, no one dive, no one's allowed to dive around me unless they've jumped in feet first into water. I feel like I've got that mother instinct and where I'm scared, but I also have to remind myself that, I mean, it's happened to me and it's very realistic, but at the same time, you can't wrap everyone in bubble wrap, because that reward that they get out of, like, the happiness my sister gets from that Harley, I know is the happiness, like, I got. So I wouldn't be able to take that away from her.
Because it almost go against with what you yeah, believe in yourself. Like, if you take that happiness away from yeah, her, it's like, hang on, I wouldn't want anyone to take that away from me. So, but at the yep, same time, I get that whole, you know, protective mother mode as well. But look, Christina, it's been a fantastic chat. Honestly, I've learned a lot personally, but there's so many key little takeaways throughout the episode, but we do like to finish the episode off with a bit of a question.
Yeah.
And you've kind of answered, I think, maybe throughout the episode, but the question is a bit of a mental well-being challenge for us, being Iz and me, and also the listeners, where we can sort of, you give us a bit of a challenge, we take it away, we go do it for the next week. And it's, ooh, something like, in the past we've had people say something as simple as making your bed each morning or going to bed earlier, or, you know,
gratitude diaries,
whatever it might be, but something that you works for you, but it's just a bit of a mental well-being challenge for the listeners and us.
Okay, one thing that definitely works for me every time, I'm not sure if it's going to work for you guys, but for some reason it does. If you feel like you're going down that road again where you're just down in the dumps or whatever, choose the next day to do your whole routine, whatever it is, whatever you normally do, completely change it. Like, I mean, from brushing your teeth at a different time to what everything you eat, what you drink that day, like completely change your whole routine and do something that you haven't done. For example, if you normally drive home from work, I want you to go whatever town you're in, type in the lookout for that town, like Barmer's Lookout Lake or whatever. Just change your routine. Just do something you've never done and just see how that makes you feel.
So it's kind of like putting yourself out of your comfort zone in a way.
Yeah.
I think it's more than that. I think it's changing like some neural pathways by disrupting the normal neural pathways that you do every single day. It's interesting. I've heard about this as a positive thing to do for our brain, and it is completely different to anything any of the guests have said. I really like that one.
I don't know the science behind it. All I know is
it works for you.
Every time I've done it, it's just like snapped me out of a mood. It's like, okay, you ready for a new chapter?
I'm going to try it. We're going to both try it. And now if you're listening to this and you've got your set routine, take Christina's little weekly challenge and just try it.
A different way to work tomorrow.
I love it.
Do your hair different. Do your makeup different. Just change it up.
Change your moustache, Hugo. I want some slices in there.
All right. You know what? I'm shaving this after this. I've got too many bloody creepy comments, and Amber hates it. My partner hates it, and it's about time it goes. November's finished, but thank you again, Christina. Honestly,
thank you for having me.
It's been your strength and resilience as a human is remarkable. But I know the word sort of inspirational gets thrown around a bit, but you truly are, to me anyway, extremely inspirational in how you sort of live your life, your mindset, what you've learned, but what you can teach others. You're a fantastic role model. And even earlier on the episode when you said you do all this, you share your story, your social media platform, you know, you don't want others to feel like they're alone. And I think that's such a powerful, powerful comment. So thank you again for being so open with us, Christina. We had a few laughs throughout, which I love. And hopefully one day we can we can meet up face to face.
Definitely. I am keen to come have a beer and see you guys. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And thank you guys for doing these podcasts so that others can listen, because I'm sure that's what people do. They'll listen and relate to something. Something will hit them and they can take away from it. So thank you guys.
Thank you so much, Christina.